There it is. You're caught. What the hell did I do? Cash in, cash out, and skim. And now they're on to you.
Don't let them see you crumble when you're under the gun. Hold your head up. Look at me. I've been down, but I'm not done. Richard Nixon came and went, but as long as I can pay the rent, I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet. Ali came back strong and svelte, won his third champion belt. Four wins, he'd be Roosevelt, but his last title card was dealt. I can, I will, end of story. I can, I will, end of story. I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet.
It's sometimes hard to remember what New York was like in the 1970s. Gritty, on the brink of bankruptcy, residents fleeing to the suburbs, the polar opposite of the city today. The economic decline fueled a robust art and music scene, and a new rock opera called This Ain't No Disco evokes the nightlife of that era, specifically the radically different worlds of Studio 54 and the Mud Club, and the wild cast of characters that populated these clubs. It's on stage at the Atlantic Theatre Company's Linda Gross Theatre until August 12th, and I'm delighted to welcome two of its stars, Theo Stockman and Chelina Kennedy, to our show. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, good to be here.
So, Theo, you play Studio 54's co-owner Steve Rebell. He is one of only two characters, I think, in the show that's based on a real person, right?
That's correct, yeah. I mean, there are some characters that are sort of evoke ideas of people, but we are, yeah, Steve's very on the nose.
You play him as quite a, let's say, sleazy character.
Thank you so much.
He's wonderful.
Is it fun for you? Is it, yeah?
Yeah, it's it might be my favorite role I've ever had. I know he has some sleaze to him, but I just love him. I love playing him. I grew up knowing who he was. He's such a New York icon, and no matter what mistakes he made, he truly loved people, and it was that love that kind of drove him to the success that he had, and the fall, and the kind of journey that we all kind of know him from today. So it's an honor to play him. I love him.
Did he really stand outside the club and personally decide who could enter?
Oh, yeah. He, like, invented that, you know, like the velvet rope thing. That was, like, his thing, and he created this community of people where, you know, it was a safe space to, yeah, do some naughty things, but for the queers and the other and the sort of weirdos of New York to have this haven to dance and express themselves and be together. And I think that's really important.
And people would live for these scenes, like live to party. They would work in the day, you know, just so they could afford to be able to go out at night and be part of these scenes. You know, I didn't realize how important it was to people's livelihoods.
Yeah. Well, Chelina, you play Binky. Can you tell us about her?
Yeah, she's a publicist who is a little down and out at the beginning of the show. She's got a very strong competition with the artist, who's Andy Warhol, and they want to find the next person that they can turn into a star. And so she gets her claws into Chad, our leading man.
Is she based on a real person or a composite?
I think a composite and some fabrication. Yeah, there's I can't remember her name now, but there's a wonderful agent back in the, I think the 60s and the 70s, and she represented Mick Jagger. Anyway, she's like, images of her come to mind, but she's not based on that character.
Were there women, I would assume there were a lot of women like her at Studio 54 hanging out on that scene.
Well, I mean, I would imagine that there were some. I mean, I always remember the celebrities, you know, and Bianca Jagger and, you know, Cher and Andy Warhol, those types, and mixed with school teachers and bus drivers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It was such a star-making scene once it became so huge that everyone who wanted to get famous off of other people would be there to find them, you know.
Well, so Binky decides to promote the career of a young graffiti artist named Chad, and she who she renames Rake. does she see herself as a star maker?
I think she does, definitely. Oh, yeah. And I think she loves the idea of riding on the coattails of whoever she creates.
She, as you mentioned, she works with the artist, who is clearly modeled after Andy Warhol, played by Will Connolly. Were there legal issues about naming him for the show, do you know, in terms of, because he's known as the artist,
or was that
just a choice?
I don't know why that choice was made.
I think so. I just think they wanted to be a little more subtle. They weren't sure which direction they were going to take him, and it kind of just gravitated towards
the wig. I think it was
probably
artistic.
Yeah.
So the artist also, Warhol character, also helps to advance the careers of artists and performers, including Chad's friend Sammy, an aspiring singer. were they really just exploiting these kids to further their own careers? I mean, this idea of star making, using their publicity machines to create stars and then take credit for discovering them, was that part of the...
I think Warhol and Binky have two very different approaches. I think Binky is definitely, you know, I don't know about her motives necessarily, but I think the artist was really trying to create the next wonderful, profound artist. You know, I think he really believes in Sammy.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of their art, was making other people famous and in turn becoming, you know, I mean, I think our director Darko referred to them as like beautiful users, these, you know, Steve and Binky. And
yeah,
they did use people, but they also truly believed in people. So it's kind of a blurred line sort of thing. It's kind of both those things, you know.
It almost felt like sort of the origins of branding, you know,
exactly.
And packaging.
Completely.
And putting things together.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another character is the DA, a black gay prosecutor who targets your character, Theo.
Sure does.
For tax evasion?
Yes, which Steve was guilty of, unfortunately.
Was that what ultimately caused the club to shut down?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were, I mean, the thing I repeat in the show is cash in, cash out, and scam. I mean, they were doing that from the beginning. They were just taking off the top, like, in huge amounts. They only paid $8,000 in taxes.
Right.
I mean, that's like the money they were making, and he was, and the hubris of it. I mean, that was his downfall, was just talking about it on air. When I say only the mafia makes more money in that scene in the second act, that really happened.
That
he really
happened.
Said that.
So the action shifts from the glamorous world of Studio 54 to the decidedly more downscale Mud Club located in Tribeca when it was still an abandoned manufacturing area before it became chic. Was Studio 54 the epitome of disco and Mud Club the ultimate punk club?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, there was something kind of punk about both of them because they were so... They were taking kind of the gritty downtown, midtown party scene and making it the mainstream, which I guess isn't exactly punk, but I think it's punk to turn anything on its head like that. I would have probably been at the Mud Club had I been there back in the day.
Yeah.
But I think they were both in competition with each other and sort of admiring each other, Steve and both Steves and
right.
Steve Mass.
Rubell actually went to the Mud Club, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. There's pictures of him partying there. And, you know, I think he liked kind of taking the pressure off himself. And
yeah. An interesting little tidbit. Steve Mass came to see our show not very long ago.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He's still around.
One of the two named characters in the play.
Yeah.
Any feedback? What was his response?
Yeah. He said it was very true to the period.
Yeah,
he was amazed by that.
Yeah.
He said, "I got Steve's voice right." And I was like, yeah.
Woo!
I have to ask Theo, why would you be at the Mud Club? What are the characteristics that make you say that?
I grew up, I mean, and I'm a big fan of punk rock, and it shaped very much who I was as a high schooler. And, you know, my fantasy was to be at CBGB's in the 70s when I moved to New York. I mean, I moved to New York to be with the people that this show is about, you know, the artists and the freaks and the uniqueness of that community. That's why I came here, you know, and I found that in theater. But yeah, that was just it's more my style, but trust me, I would have loved to be at the studio.
I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Theo Stockman and Chelina Kennedy, who star in This Ain't No Disco with Atlantic Theater Company. It seems like, as you've been saying, the clubs catered to very different scenes, and the Mud Club was more for aspiring artists and Studio 54 for more celebrities, like more celebrity-oriented than Mud Club was, right?
Yeah.
I mean, or people becoming celebrities, you know, it was kind of a fame-hungry crowd. But, I mean, I think part of the appeal was that once you were in there, celebrities were the same as anyone else. There was no celebrity worship in the club. Everyone who was in there felt famous. And I think that was part of the
draw.
Yeah. So the music of the show isn't exactly in the style of either disco or punk. Can you talk about how the musical style of the show was developed, or your sense of how it was developed?
Well, I know that they've been working on it for over a decade.
Yeah.
Peter Yanovitz and Stephen Trask. I mean, my sense of it, I mean, I'm just speaking from my perspective, but it feels like kind of rock poetry. There's a lot of different styles, and it's unique. And I think that's why I love it so much, is that you can't really put it in a box.
Yeah, it's all over the place. It's every form of music. I mean, I'm obsessed with it. It's the kind of show that had I seen it as a younger artist, I would have been so drawn to it, and it would have been so important for me. And yeah, I think they're just such geniuses at different styles and at different talents, and they contain such multitudes as musicians that it bounces from new wave to punk to disco to classic musical theater to mm-hmm. everything, to beat poetry. It's all over the place.
And they do it all with so few instruments. I mean, I think there's only five in the band, right? Yeah. And so, and you know, Peter on the V drums, I mean, he creates different worlds just with, you know, just with his drums. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, and as you mentioned, the show is created by Stephen Trask, Peter Janowitz, and Rick Ellis, veterans of the shows like Hedwig and the Angry Itch, Jersey Boys, Peter and the Starcatcher. Have they talked to you about, at all about what inspired them to choose this era, New York City in the late 1970s, and specifically these clubs? I mean, 10 years is a long time to have been working on it. Have they even just illuminated, you know, that, because that's a long process, so were there sort of bumps along the way or changes in how they thought about it, or you just know it was a long...
I'm sure there were.
Yeah. I can imagine.
There were some workshops, and I mean, they've just been working on it for forever, but I don't want to speak for them, but... They're sort of kindred spirits of mine. We have very similar tastes in music. And I think for anyone who, no matter what age you are, who is into a certain kind of counterculture or, you know, music that isn't just the mainstream, the 70s in New York City is just kind of the mecca of when things really changed and when something was happening that you could feel in the air. And everyone thinks of that time as like, you know, that's I mean, the 60s were obviously the counterculture began, but the 70s, there was a dirtiness to it and a sort of unsettledness, and it was almost kind of dangerous. And, you know, there's something very alive about that. So I would think that's why they probably chose this time. Mm. I mean, but
well, and it should be mentioned that no one in this show or the creators, for that matter, are old enough to have been around when either of these clubs were thriving.
Yeah.
So how did you research the era and in your roles?
Well, I started with a couple of wonderful books that were in the rehearsal room. I mean, the wonderful thing about starting a show from the beginning is you've got all kinds of visuals. You know, the designers bring a whole wall full of images and they bring books. And so we were looking at all different kinds, reading all different kinds of things. I watched, a couple of documentaries. I watched a wonderful one on Basquiat. And his journey and what eventually happened to him. And I learned a lot from that documentary. I can't remember what it was called, but it was, I think I told you about it anyway. It was about that whole time period and about the art scene at that time. And it was fascinating to me. So I did a lot of my own personal research.
Yeah, there's kind of a plethora of stuff out there. There's a book called The Last Party that I'm still reading. That really is about Steve and the Mud Club and that scene, and with direct quotes from people who knew him. I mean, there's an A&E biography that I watched. There's if you just YouTube Steve Rubell, there's photo videos of him denying people at the club, turning them away. There's him backstage with Michael Jackson being like, Michael just comes here to dance, you know, like nobody bothers him, like he's there, you know, he's like still preserved. And so I mean, I've been watching him kind of before this job was even a part of my life, and I just continued to do that, and, you know, I have a real affection for him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what drives that affection?
I love the way he brought people together and created a home for people, you know, for people that needed it, and that's what our show celebrates, and that's why I'm so proud of it, and to have all different colors and shapes and bodies and genders, and sexualities on that stage, telling the story together, it feels like a home to me.
And, all inclusive, even people with hats.
There are hats. It's crazy.
The building that housed the Mud Club is now luxury condos.
Of course.
Studio 54 is a Broadway theater. And Steve Rubell and his partner, Ian Traeger, went to prison. And then Rubell died of AIDS in 1989. Andy Warhol died a few years earlier. Did everyone who was part of the scene come to a bad end?
A lot of people. I mean, the kind of tragic thing about our show is that it, you know, the ending of it, if you've seen it, it really feels to me like the funeral of a decade, because literally the next year was the 80s, and Reagan was around the corner. AIDS was around the corner. The homeless crisis was around the corner. I mean, just like the hangover of the 80s was right there. And it kind of reminds me of a time we're in now, which really feels like the hangover of the Obama era, you know? So... Yeah, a lot of people didn't make it. Some people did, though. I mean, Steve Rubell, even, they went to prison for, I think, 13 months. And then they got out and they basically created the boutique hotel, like the notion of what that is. They kind of had a fall from grace and then totally recovered. And unfortunately, he did get sick later, but he'd found a life partner. And, you know, his life does have tragedy in it, but he kind of bounced back in a way that I think is kind of amazing.
And what about Binky and her ilk? Are they still going strong in today's era of self-promotion?
Binky's a survivor of the piece. I think definitely she became, you know, one of the moneymakers of the 1980s, and she had her own TV show, and she did very, very well.
Her face is frozen, but she's thriving.
Her face is frozen with the Botox.
The title, This Ain't No Disco, is from a Talking Heads song. Is it meant to evoke the ultimate emptiness of those clubs, perhaps, or...
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, part of it is also like, don't label us, you know? Sure, disco was happening, but it's really about the people. And there is a moment in our show when the lights turn on in the club, and it's very jarring, because if you've ever been out late and the lights turn on in a bar or a club, it's raw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and I have to say that was probably one of the most raw lighting experiences I've had in a theatrical setting.
Good. Yeah, our designers are incredible. I mean, all of them.
Well, we began the interview by hearing the two of you singing I'm Not Done Yet, and we're going to go out with Theo singing My 54. It's been a pleasure to speak to both of you today.
Thank you so much for having us. Come see us.
Yes.
I've been speaking with Chelina Kennedy and Theo Stockman about starring in the world premiere of the new rock opera at the Atlantic Theater Company, This Ain't No Disco.